In this episode of the Smart Community Podcast, I have a great catch-up chat with Aditi Padhi, the Deputy Director of Planning for Yashi Consulting Services. You might remember that I spoke with Aditi in July of last year, which was episode 120. Now, in this episode, Aditi gives us a bit of an update on the project she's working on and how COVID has changed some of their plans. We discuss how COVID has affected Aditi and her work this year, and a bit about the lockdown and semi-lockdown situations in India. Aditi tells us about some of the challenges their team has been facing with getting data from different disciplines to match or talk to each other, as well as the differences in the scale of areas of interest for different disciplines. We talk about how COVID has exposed the delicate balance between interconnected and self-reliant cities, and the way we look at distribution of population in a more complex way. Aditi and I then discuss the emerging trends of engaged citizens and having feedback mechanisms so that the community can correct incorrect city data, as well as the changing way people are choosing where to live based on their lifestyle rather than employment. We finish our chat discussing the opportunity for bringing historical districts and legacy parts of the cities into the 21st century. As always, we hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
Welcome to the smart community, smart regions, smart towns, and smart cities. It's where we live, work, and play. With smart communities, the future starts today. Big data, smart mobility, emerging trends galore. The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.
This episode was brought to you by our sponsors, TPL Connect. TPL Connect are specialists in the design and delivery of smart city and IoT technology projects, offering consulting, design, and project management services. Their strength is their ability to deliver your project vision and not a compromised one. They do this by working with you in the early stages of feasibility to detail your project vision, objectives, requirements, and scope. Then work with you to deliver the project through to completion and handover. Their team take the stress out of designing and delivering technically difficult projects by working on your behalf to deliver the original requirements and objectives of the project. TPL Connect, your project vision delivered. Hello, Aditi. How are you today?
Doing well, Zoe. It's good to see you all across the world. We are remote, but we are still connected. Thank you for this.
No, thank you for coming on. I'm so glad that we found the time to connect. And I mean, we've just been having a bit of a chat about what we've been up to and the things that have changed, that haven't changed, the things that we don't miss, things we're never going back to. And it's been really, really fascinating. And I was like, I better hit record so then we can actually record some of this great convo. But let's first start. You've been on the podcast before. I just looked it up and it was in July last year, episode 120, when we were talking about your baby project, which you said now is a terrible toddler.
Yeah.
So we can talk about that in a sec. But let's first go to tell us about your background and what you're passionate about.
So I do have a design background. I started as an architect, but I did my master's in planning from Copenhagen Business School. And then I also have a business degree. But I think at the heart of it, I've always been somebody who's looked at community spaces. I love the fact that, you know, part of my education was in America, which looks at community, urban design, and cities in a very different way than what we look at in the Scandinavian countries, which is so collaborative. And then we have India, which has been a very organic beast of a city. And like I said, when we did the podcast a year ago, India was 2016, we started Smart Cities, the initiative. 500 cities, we were so geared. In my life, it was my 16th year as a planner, and I was like, oh my God, this is what I waited for. And this COVID, we had like a pause, and we went back and we looked at our GIS MIS dashboard. And now I'm in my toddler terrible two phase of the project, and it's been so interesting, the learning. And, you know, the things that we are going to do differently about, you know, what we intend to do. So yeah, I love the fact that, you know, everything's tied up for me in this COVID time in a very interesting way, because I did draw upon my background of working as a metro architect, because what is the first thing that didn't work in the COVID time? The transportation, social distancing. So, you know, my entire background with community spaces, public space, infrastructure, because like I said, I'd come from a government sector. So we were looking at where are we going to put our COVID centers? And of course, what was it? It was parking areas related to metro and transit and easiest way to connect, because you don't want people to be, so, you know, that corridor, that COVID corridor is what we called it in Delhi, that we established to be able to reach out. And it drew upon my entire work life, which was interesting, because one sort of forgets, I don't know if it happens to everybody who's been doing this for a while, you forget the roots of where you started and where the whole idea of getting people together started for a city level project.
That's so interesting. I was talking to somebody, Imogen, last week, a lady that is doing smart community work in, it's a unique little place where they're on the border of New South Wales and Victoria. And so they've got a smart community strategy. It's called Two Cities, One Community. Anyway, she was talking about going back to your roots and just kind of, you know, sometimes we get, particularly in the smart city space, we get caught up in all this stuff that could happen. And, you know, we want the global, you know, this and the innovation, that or whatever. But actually, at the end of the day, what is it actually about? And then bringing it back to that, I think that's definitely something that COVID has done for me, bringing it back. And that's what you're talking about there. So yeah, really, really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, COVID and how it's affected you. Tell us where you're based in India, and tell us what your journey's been like, I suppose. Like in Australia, it started probably around March. And was it similar in India?
Yes, I was still going to work in March. So I've been at home since April. And so like I said, because we couldn't continue with our physical planning work, which was setting up substations or looking at ETPs or STPs, what we did was we went back and we looked at our data assimilation. And that is a step which is like the dirty background work in planning smart city infrastructure work. And we have 90 different faculties that come together in a GIS MIS dashboard. And of course, in concept, it's very simple. You have the terrain, you have property, you'd get the revenue drawings from the municipalities, put the GIS, get all the information from all the infrastructure and combine it. But when we actually went, we took this pause, we stopped for a second and we looked at our MIS, we realized that none of these guys had ever really come together to coordinate on their data before. So what was happening was that we couldn't get a data registry to match with electricity data, coordinates that were being used for water and supply. And of course, people didn't even know. A lot of people didn't know that their land was piecemeal, because there was data which was nearly 100, 150 years old, always on paper, that basically came up. I'm particularly talking about the project that I've been looking at, which is 30 million properties in 17 smart cities, which are coming up simultaneously because they're very close to each other. And the reason why this particular project is because it was the first one that wanted to digitize. And putting together 19 different aspects of the same geographical feature was challenging, not just from the geometry or from the subterranean, the dig infrastructure, the imposed smart city infrastructure that we want to do, but simply in the language, the vocabulary of water and electricity and services and utilities are so different from transit, which is so different from the horticulturists and the arborists. And while we talk about this all the time, planning is multidisciplinary, but we do work in silos. And data matching has been, we've looked at our algorithm. So what happens is you can search data with different queries, but getting that group of queries correct to be able to even view the data, because this database, this dashboard is going to be used for e-governance, and it's going to be used by various departments. And just to be able to speak to the stakeholders, and I know we talk about this theoretically a lot, but this is the first time we had no other choice but to just look at the stakeholders. And it's interesting. You hear a lot of the problems that they, like a lot of people want, we try to put it on mobile devices. We want to be able to have a query in a dashboard that you can fill in data. And you can put in anything from a bill from your electricity to your mobile number to your social security number to be able to see information about yourself and to be able to pay your property taxes, to be able to clear your bills. But people struggled with the interface because they didn't know what they were looking for. So, you know, the chicken and the egg. Do we educate the users? Do we educate the public? Do we teach government departments? Or do we invoke common sense and be like, hey, it just makes sense. It's more efficient to get everything together. And that, I think, we had not seen in that newborn phase where we thought this was all going to really, really work out. Mm-hmm. And interesting thing, you know, India has a very interesting social fabric. And nothing brings it out like a natural calamity or a pandemic. And we had torrid rains this year. We had already, we were in capacity or beyond capacity when it came to transit and when it came to medical infrastructure because of the COVID. And then in India is facing, again, the typhoon, hurricane months. And you really sort of realize that there are some things you can only work from a perspective of contingency rather than more lofty ideas of let me mitigate everything. I think some things you just need to come from a standpoint of contingency. And I think that was also a very important lesson with this time, that maybe a lot of the social infrastructure of people are stuck in places. Migrant workers have to walk for weeks to be able to get back home because when transit, nationwide transit stops, you can't get anything done. Your whole world collapses. And that's what I came back to, that we went back to the roots and we spoke about how people occupy space where they work, where they live and where they are from. And people really, you know, we have a unique class and a caste system. So when it came to people moving around or just being on their own, some communities came together, some did not. And you sort of start looking at history because you realize that, you know, there is prejudice that is buried, but it's not gone. And that comes out in a moment of panic. And I think that is something, the socioeconomic aspect is something we skip as planners. We do it demographically. We do it in terms of employment. We do it in terms of numbers. We do it very clinically. But when it comes to being able to even put together a small city in terms of a survey, a web-based survey, people were worried not only in terms of disease, they were also worried in terms of are they going to relocate me? What are planners up to? Why are they shaking up the status quo? I'm panicking right now. I don't want to be dealing with somebody who looks or sounds or behaves differently because India also has those little micro differences. So I found it very interesting. And at this stage, where we really thought we had so much of a handle on at least the data assimilation, the problems that we face.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. And I think you're right. There's so many things that this brings out. It's not just the direct impacts of health or whatever. It's all these other things that we don't necessarily think about, but are so important, and the social fabric of, you know, our very being of how we operate and how we, you know, why cities function the way that they do or why they don't in some cases under certain circumstances, and occupying space. That's really, really interesting. I think let's go back a little bit to your project. And can we just recap for the audience in case they hadn't listened, and it was a year ago, so they've probably forgotten, recap what your project was or is currently, and then I guess how it's changed as well, which you've already kind of started talking about.
So basically, we are working towards getting a smart infrastructure into tier two cities, because I think it's just easier to look at growth. There was existing master plan for involving and growing certain sectors of these cities. And we are not looking at it as individual cities for some, I'm sure there's a bigger political reason, but I'm assuming it's also a resource-based decision. And I think when we looked at our milestones, we didn't register it at that point of time, but our government officials and investors were looking at it as an opportunity to get a GIS, to get a hold upon tax revenue. There's a lot of lost data on land revenue in the state of Haryana that I'm looking at the moment. And when we were looking at getting cadastral drawings together, mapping it out in a GIS, you know, attaching it so you connect it to the land, the infrastructure that you've mapped from GIS, you realize that in this particular project, we found that there was a lack of understanding of a lot of people for water, for example. There is municipal water available, but they did not know that they had the opportunity to tap into a municipal water line. So they were using groundwater in a lot of areas. There were a lot of places which did not realize that they are in violation of land use. So there was just so much mixed use. And it was a peculiar kind of mixed use that we as planners don't study and we don't have norms on. Like there was schools and semi-formal ways of commerce, which we continue to put it in the residential land use. And you start looking at the criticality of understanding this information and its complexity. Because somehow we have a tendency, like I said, planning is a very top-down approach. You look at a lot of data and you try to make it as simple as possible. And an oversimplification has happened in the way we have so far recorded data. There is a lack of understanding of what is the area of interest. It would be very easy if the area of interest was blocks and sectors and subsectors for all disciplines. But the area of interest for electricity is generally 3 times larger than the area of interest, which is for community-based spaces and water and utilities. And it is even smaller for social infrastructure. Because social infrastructure, we do it in populations of 5,000, 10,000. But physical infrastructure, we do it in populations of 100,000, 200,000. So the way we calculate physical infrastructure that we are going to project for a particular population is on a different scale than the way we do it for, say, social infrastructure, for fire, for ambulance, for police centers. And I've looked at it before and I've always felt, this is interesting. We do it in a different way. And I do both kinds of projections for my cities. But it is just for the first time when I put it all together on my dashboard that I realized that if people are looking at the same data, but from a different scale, they'll have a different understanding of it. And it's not easy to reconcile this, because the funny thing about planning is we have a lot of people and very little land. This is the truth about any city, no matter even if it's a greenfield project, there is never enough land. So if I'm giving land to a fire station or a medical center, I'm probably taking it away from a school. I mean, it's always a loss and gain sort of a proposition. And I would love, as a planning professional, to be able to put a lovely equation to this. What needs the land more? What needs the resources more? But it becomes subjective. And it goes back to my question about why do we look at social infrastructure in a different scale versus why do we look at physical infrastructure in a different scale? Because if only we could sort of find a way to cater to the same group of people from all different aspects, can we sort of understand who's going to be given a preference for land particularly? Do we give it to STP or do we give it to a substation? Do we want to put a police center? Because, you know, first responders clearly did not get priority in some of our cities, which came up during the COVID times. Or do we give it to long-term social infrastructure like schools, parks, sports areas, which were not used during the COVID times? So then you sort of start thinking about do these need to be individual spaces or do they need to be multi-use spaces? Because they are not used year around. And of course, the big question now is, do we need stores? Do we need strip malls? is everything on your phone now? Do you do all commerce on the phone now? And what happens to all that prime real estate, all commercial real estate, bang in the center of your city, when offices are being halved? Malls as we know it will probably never go back to retail as we know it, is never going to recover from this. It's just going to become a different hybrid altogether, I feel. So the number of people who've just gone to co-working spaces for their work, like I know for a fact that smaller businesses have just given up their workspaces because, you know, the operational costs have and capital costs have just gone down suddenly. And they've actually seen a profit in the businesses, surprisingly. So that's where the project is at. That's where we started at. You know, just looking at basic, simple land use, land area, population numbers. But what we have discovered is that there is a complexity and it should not be sort of lost in translation.
So interesting. I think there's so many things, and obviously country by country, we're having all different conversations, but a lot of the, you know, similar themes are underlying. We just have all these different contexts, obviously, in how many people, what, you know, what are people doing, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, no, really, really interesting. And I think like for you now, are you coming out of locking down or are you still in, were you in a lockdown situation in India?
Yes, we were in complete lockdown for over 2 months. We're in partial lockdown right now. So essential services are back to work entirely. And I think banks are open. So even privatized banks are back. But we are consultants. My firm is a private firm. So, but all my projects are city, government, city, municipalities. All my clients are municipal commissioners and engineers, and they are working. So I do have a partial work situation as well. And so does everybody in the construction, real estate, architecture, engineering situation, whereby you are trying to keep yourself safe. But I am going for meetings, and I'm going for meetings which involve public dealing, because like I said, we are for the first time facing our stakeholders, because this is the time to do it. Everybody has a pause in their life and this is the time they can engage, and we wanted to utilize this as much as possible. So yeah, I think the most interesting aspect of lockdown was that you have to realize how self-reliant you really need to be, because it's a spectrum. There is a codependency between cities and municipalities and blocks and an overlap. And there is a reasonable amount of self-reliance you need to be able to have. So when they started quarantining certain areas, and I think the worst city to be seeing this is Mumbai. And Mumbai is surrounded by 4 different smart city projects, which clearly banked upon the existing transportation, commercial, workflow, workforce that was going to come from the city to be able to utilize this. But the moment, and Mumbai is still under quarantine, and it has entire blocks and 2-3 kilometer areas which are quarantined and with a large number of people who have corona, you start realizing that why did we not plan for these cities to be a little more self-reliant? Why didn't they have a plan B for workforce, particularly service-oriented workforce? What happens if you suddenly close down entire portions of a smart city and your entire medical staff is concentrated here? Because I don't know whether this happens in Australian cities, but people from same service backgrounds tend to prefer certain geographical areas. Like a certain area will always have more hospitals, so you'll find a lot of doctors preferring to either rent, lease, buy homes there. And, you know, if a certain area has got very good school districts, then you have a certain age demographic that settles there versus not. And that suddenly takes away a little bit of the self-reliance if suddenly you need to be able to silo out certain cities for whatever reasons. It's not always going to be a pandemic. It's not always going to be a flooding situation like we've had in India lately. There can be a lot of other reasons, but do we sort of provide all that an area needs to sustain itself, particularly in terms of services, is something that we learned even as a sweaty city dweller. Mm-hmm. Like I live in a sub city, which is, it's not the main NCR city. So I'm about 30-20 kilometers from the city, so it's close enough that it's a 20-minute train ride, although I am a bad, terrible, non-ecological human being who drives and feel very guilty about it, as we all do. But it's close enough, but far enough. But there are certain things, multi-speciality hospitals. My uncle recently had a stroke. And with a stroke, I think the first 2 hours, the response time is very important. And if you go to a big hospital, a government facility or a medical university-oriented hospital, they would check you for corona and they will go through a longer process versus going to a smaller hospital nearby. And so my whole thought process was, he needs to be attended to immediately and I can't deal with corona screening for him right now. And his kids are not around, so I had to rush him. And even as a person, and I looked at this, I realized there's a corona corridor. If I say I have a person who's got a medical condition, I can reach faster. But how much faster? 10 minutes faster. I'm still going to go there. There are going to be lines. They're going to do an antigen check and they're going to do a temperature check. And it added that 30 minutes, which he couldn't afford. And we went to a much smaller clinic. And I didn't know if they could have attended to his urgent medical emergency. They could, because I'm in Delhi. But what if I was in a smaller town? What if those doctors were stuck up because of checks and blocks? So it just makes you wonder if you should seriously look at distribution of your population in a more complex way, rather than the way things are being done at the moment. Mm-hmm. And this was my personal experience. And then, you know, my inner architect planner was thinking, like, what if I had taken the other decision? What would have been the repercussions on me? You know, I couldn't have taken him by public transit, which would have been the fastest, which is always the fastest in a big city. And with the way things are right now, movement is so restricted if you are in a private vehicle, which is necessary because this is how you keep a population of 1 billion people safe. It would have been too late, maybe.
Mm. Yeah, it's so interesting. And like, there's so many nuances and so many things that are being affected. I think, like, we don't think about those things, obviously, until they happen to us and then continually. But yes, the inner nerd planners, engineers come out and go, what could I do to enable this to happen in a better way for my city, for my community? And I think that's where, you know, when we talk about smart community concepts and all that kind of stuff and the technology, it's not that technology. It's like, well, what could, like, when you trace it back, what is the outcome of that for the people? And I think that's really important to keep bringing it back to, which I think that's what this time has kind of, you know, done for us. But yeah, so interesting. Thank you so much for sharing your personal story there, because I think it is important to bring it back to, well, what does that mean for people? Yeah, and I imagine it's going to be continued to be interesting for a few, well, a lot more months. I mean, particularly in Australia, we're coming out and then we're coming back. Restrictions are coming back when little outbreaks happen and that type of thing, or big outbreaks happen. So yeah, moving forward, it's nearly September now when we're recording this. Yeah, can't imagine. And I don't like to say these things, you just get so outdated so quickly, but like, yeah, you know, by Christmas, like, you know, it'll be so interesting to see what's happening. Yes.
Opening up, the world opening up is going to be very interesting. I wonder what's going to happen when, you know, New Zealand is being so good with the corona. And I was already a fan of, you know, we are cricket nations, so we love each other. So I was such a fan of how they managed it, but I really want to see what happens when people start traveling, you know?
Yeah, even Auckland had cases come up. So it's like,
yes, exactly.
What's happening under the surface that isn't being detected?
Because the English travel, that's what happened. The English went to New Zealand, that's what happened.
Okay, it's been so great to chat with you. I've got a couple of questions I want to ask. Last time we would have talked about emerging trends, so I'm keen to hear what your thoughts are now about emerging trends. So what are the emerging trends that people aren't talking about enough?
So I think there is a critique of how we leave a lot of decision-making to automated ways of doing things. So one of the things I feel is the ability to be a little more independent in a city in terms of your own space and the decision that goes into it. And by that, I mean, like the simple thing that I did when I had to find medical emergency services during COVID times, I called up my cousin in the middle of the night because it was US for her. And I asked her that, should I go to the smallest clinic and are they going to be able to handle it? And I couldn't make that decision because nothing was on my fingertips and I'm so used to being educated. And I think smart city should just make us a little smarter. And by that, I literally mean that I need to be able to understand what goes into my environment. And I think a lot of that comes to the fact that we engage people a little more easily. So I think there is some merit to the idea of going back to what already works for people in terms of the way they deal with their space. So if a certain area of a city is comfortable with its size, its proportion, its heights, can we build that into a system and have some kind of backfeed to it? And I think a feedback mechanism is something that I've started seeing in my projects already. I think one of the first things that's floating with my dashboard is an ability for people to come back and correct their documentation on a GIS database. So when we went to the municipal commissioner and we met our engineers and they're like, has there been an increase in the tax net database? I mean, are we going to get more tax revenue? Because the bottom line. But what was something that we did not expect happen was that when people saw the pilot GIS database or the MIS GIS database, they realized that the names, the age, the information that was there related to their own property was not correct. And there was information about their lease and, you know, there's the schemes, the government schemes that facilitate the infrastructure of their zone that they were not aware of suddenly started getting linked to their database. And people came back empowered with agency to say, listen, this was in my mother's name. Now this has become my brother's. This was sold in 2006, but it has not been registered. It auto-corrected. And this is where we, of course, realized that, oh my God, let's not take our data assimilation for granted. But it was just such an interesting, and it was such a low tech, but such an interesting feedback from just our pilot project, which was a small town of 10 million people that we could sort of get. And I'm excited about seeing how the fact that everybody has a smartphone and they can check everything about their smart city on their phone is going to affect and become collaborative. At the end of the day, I think when they say about Internet of All Things, everything assimilated, dare say singularity of data and everything, the fact that they can view everything about their lives on an app, in a dashboard, in a very small way, because e-governance is just so much bigger, is going to give an opportunity for genuine collaboration with the actual users of a city. So I'm excited about this. But of course, I'm going to go through my notes and see if there's anything in terms of actual technology that I feel is coming out. I think the most important technology that has come up is resources. I think because you are isolated, you are remote, there has been a great amount of data that has been created for resources at hand. There were a lot of communities that couldn't get food, that couldn't get any water in certain areas, where the community lobbied together and came up with private citizen communities that physically went and helped people who didn't have help. Then, I have an interesting observation. I've seen a change in development of housing. You know, initially, the way we've been doing things for the last several decades is you live around where you work and you work around where you live. But there are a lot of people who are now opting to work a certain amount from home, and communities are coming around lifestyle. So I have a lot of my friends who have just moved to golfing communities, off city, off almost off grid, sustainable, ecological, the things that people wanted to do, but they couldn't do because they were tethered geographically to a node at work. I think the way we plan communities will change because now people have started being aware of lifestyle and what they can do if they had more time and if they're not spending 3 hours in traffic. And I think one of the things I see just from a pure physical planning perspective would be that people would start living around lifestyle and work somehow happens from a remote, more connected space. Rather than and more ether virtual space rather than a physical space happening. I know people who've moved around farm and ranch communities have come up in India. And I think there was a systemic way of breaking that. We were an agriculture based, ranch based community, and we were a very rich agriculture community. And somehow we lost it along the way, at least in the last 20 years. And everybody wanted to be around IT cities, textile parks, industrial parks, because that's where the jobs were. But there was the loss and an opportunity to have a lifestyle because you're not around the kind of schools and universities you want to send your kids to, or you're not around the kind of natural resources you want to be around. And I think because it's around lifestyle and we are a much educated lot now than we were 20 years ago, personal sustainable practices are going to come into play. Like I said, I have friends who've actually moved in. Most of them are from the design background. So we are all guilty of not being as sustainable as we want to be, but we want to be more sustainable. So I have friends who have moved to ecological communities around lifestyle, and I want to do that too.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what I'm calling it tree change now with Wi-Fi. So as long as we have that strong internet connection and particularly knowledge-based jobs, like it's a very different story when, you know, we're talking about different hospitality jobs or whatever, but what other skills can we develop? I guess what other skills can people develop so then it's not one or the other? I think we'll see much more. I know people are talking about this gig economy, but I actually think it's more like that me as a professional will do more than one thing at the same time. And I mean, I do that now, like I, you know, do the podcast, but I'm a consultant, but I'm working on different projects and want to do some research. So you don't necessarily have to do everything full-time all of the time. I think that will be more and more acceptable in the professional sense. Because I think when we talk about, you know, the gig economy, we're talking kind of lower tech jobs or lower knowledge-based jobs, but actually I think that'll be more and more ubiquitous after this time. But also I think just generally. And then, yeah, I agree. I think you have to think about your home as your workplace, which will be really interesting, all the implications that will have, not just on design, but on policy and legislation. It'll be really, really interesting and how employers are going to have to work and that type of thing. So, yeah, no, there's so much in that.
So one of the things I started with when the COVID started, because like I said, I used to travel, sometimes drive for 4 hours to go to a city to meet a municipal commissioner of that city. And I think for the first 2 months, I couldn't. It was by law not allowed. And I had to do a lot of trust building. I had to do a lot of banking. I wanted to look at, you know, personal finances and investment. And I had to speak to my banker. And I was somebody who would be like, I want to go and sit and look the banker in the eye and know that my money is safe. But there was an opportunity to genuinely be able to put your trust in somebody that is not sitting directly in front of you. And that, I think, is also going to change the way we do legislation, because now it's not suspicious that you're running work from home. It's not, you know, there's always a tax revenue component when there's a business from home that somehow governments are always suspicious about. But if it becomes the new normal, if everybody can have a source of income directly from their source of residence, do we not look at putting away all these ideas of, you know, commercial areas, different taxations, different way of planning them, give them different services, different utilities, and be like, how does somebody live around in their little microcosm, which becomes the macrocosm, if you can even use that term, like, you know, you become, like I said, more lifestyle oriented. You want to be around your own sphere of interest, and it becomes a little more acceptable in terms of policy and legislation. Because I honestly feel I'm questioning the roots of certain things like the land use that we have. We have such strict land use in our cities sometimes. Industrial parks, for example. In 2020, we have looked at our EIA and we've thrown out a lot of our 50, 60-year-old EIA policies, and we are trying to revamp them. And like I said, for the first time, everything is available on your phone. So I have been reading up on environment and on my spare time, because now I'm not driving 3 hours to work. And I want to be able to say I'm not an environmental engineer, but I have worked closely on projects that have an environmental, because a lot of us start our work life with industrial projects. Those are the first projects you do as a planner. And there is a certain way you look at it, and then there's a certain understanding, if you are interested, you'll have about white technology and green technology in industrialization. There's no one way of industrializing or bringing in industries into a city. And it's only when people are open or agencies are open enough to change legislation, like we are doing with our EIA 2020, that it's going to happen. And this is an opportunity for me to say things like, what about ecological communities? People are doing it. They're doing it in a small way. And it sounds a little fanciful that, oh my God, I just want to live in a place which has got 50% solar energy. I will not move to a place which uses off the grid. I mean, on the grid, which is using a lot of, fossil fuel energy. But it sounds fanciful, but this is an opportunity to be like, no, I believe in this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get an electrical car. Let's put in more electrical car power stations now. I think a lot of countries which are very big in the use of automobile have that. Like, I want to buy a sustainable automobile, because I don't use, my work is such that I can't do public transit. I don't have such organized meetings. I have to sometimes rush and I need a car. So this is my logic with myself. But can I make it a more sustainable choice, even if it's in a small way? Mm-hmm. I would do it if I could charge my car electrically, or if I could do something else more often. And that is an emerging thing that can only happen when you acknowledge the fact that people want to make these choices for themselves. They don't want to be restricted to the choices of what is given right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's a lot of the future of communities. It's like shaping what we want it to be. But, and I agree, sometimes it can be just like, oh, that's idealistic or whatever. But actually, that's how you could start with that, but the policies and the regulations and all those things then feed into what we're shaping this community is. We can shape what our future, you know, is and what the community is. And I think, yeah, it all starts with something as well. And I think that sometimes we forget how really small things end up being really big things over time. And like, you know, that's the thing that always keeps going is that time and how that really shapes and shifts. And these movements are all started by really tiny things that, and then gain momentum, which I think is very similar to, you know, what we're talking about in smart community space, but then also what this time, so COVID time, will, I guess, morph into because of, you know, the things we're thinking about now, the things we're not doing now, the things that we think are important now that we didn't before, and vice versa. Anyway, we're going to have to wrap up because this has been such a great conversation, Aditi, and thanks so much for coming onto the podcast. Let's just go to how can people connect with you?
So I think I'm going to give out my personal email this time because, you know, it's just easier. I'm on it more often on my phone. So it's aditipadhi@gmail.com, aditipadhi@gmail.com. I'm on LinkedIn with the same email address. And I am also going to be putting up some of my writings because this dashboard has been such a baby for me. And I really sort of want to take away some of the interesting work from it. And I think we'll make it like a co-author with my company. And it recently got some media and press. I'm feeling encouraged to put it out there for the LinkedIn community as well. So I hope I get a lot of feedback. And I have recently realized that I think feedback is something we all shy away from. And I personally have. And I think it's helped me a lot in my projects. And I think it will help everybody a lot if they were a lot more open to collaborate at this time, because people are willing. They are ready to do it in the most constructive way now. And I look forward to more collaboration and constructive creative collabs if possible. And it's always a joy talking to you. We always have the most interesting conversations, even though I wonder if we digress. But I think it's always a good digress.
Yes. No, I agree. And we're going to have another combo. Maybe we just need to have a Zoom coffee or a glass of wine or something and just, yeah, have a chat because, so interesting. And I think, you know, again, I think if we talk in a month, we'll be talking about
absolutely. The next time we talk, I'm going to talk about our central vista, you know, Australia, India, New Zealand. We are all settled by the English. And I've been saying the English a lot of times now, but one of the things we're doing is we are for the first time poking at our central government sector for the first time in 100 years. 1911 was when the capital city was established, and it was an untouchable historical fact. And I think my city, the city I live in, is being very brave. And it's such a polarizing thing because it is also the green lung of the city. The biggest parks and government avenues and the green zone and the tree-lined parks that, you know, kind of look like Europe and all of that is there. But it is also an opportunity to make a government district that works for the smart city Delhi it wants to be with its Master Plan 2041 coming up. And like, it's an infinite amount of money. Like, I think I don't even have the numbers ready for the first time in my life. It's like, I think, 100,000 million, 10, 12 zeros project. Yep. And I'm very excited about this. So the next time we speak, I want to talk towards how we can take a city of 30 million people and poke around with history to be able to look at the entire, because it affects the image of the entire nation. Mm. Like, so far, smart cities have been new states, new capitals, smaller towns, but this is the first time they're going to be attempting to really bring the central district, the Latians Delhi, to the 21st century. And I love living in these times. I love the drama, the controversy, the debates on the news channels. I think somebody will kill somebody soon.
Such interesting times. Yes.
So I'm giving a feeler out there so that the next time we do this, it's going to be a ton of this.
Sounds good. Okay. Great to chat, and looking forward to our next conversation. Thanks so much for coming onto the podcast, and we will talk soon.
We'll talk soon. I look forward to hearing you every time. I think I love listening to your resources. I really do.
Thanks, Aditi. I love having you on. So, yeah, we'll talk soon. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart Community Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes are available on our website, mysmart.community/podcast. If you have any questions for us or any of our guests, you can email hello@mysmart.community. You can also find us on the socials. We are on LinkedIn and Twitter @smartcomhq. That's com with two M's. If you are enjoying the podcast, please hit subscribe so you never miss an episode. And we would love for you to leave us a rating and review at wherever you listen. This really helps us reach more ears and eyes, so thank you for your support. As always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it.
The Smart Community Podcast is what you're looking for.